Africa live in Africa, definitely so. But we shouldn't see it in the name. We, the Africa, should just bring to our mind that history, that past, and that presence there, the nations of our people that are there. Africa should just be a word to bring our mind there. But don't get hung up on the word. I'm African. big wooden image of a big coffin of Africa hanging around his neck, you know, and going down to his knee. I'm African, you know. That's the kind of behavior that it feeds you. It feeds you that kind of behavior because it's a myth. It's a myth. So you see Africa in a name, and the name says nothing but darkness. And darkness makes you exaggerate reality. Yes, darkness makes you exaggerate reality. Aren't the biggest exaggerations in sleep?
That's simple.
Yeah. Now, we have to remember that we are people of an original land. We came from somewhere that's history. That's history, you know it. So we live in the history of the people that we came from. That's a living history. That history doesn't stop there. We were brought here to America, made slaves, finally emancipated, and great leaders came up immediately after emancipation. They had already formed even during slavery. Booker D. Washington was a slave. He was a slave boy. He was a born a slave. Frederick Douglass was a slave, a young boy, a slave, a man, young man in slavery. But their minds were already developing even when they were in slavery. So we also have a history of determination in our souls and in our mind and our intellect to establish ourselves and to tell the world that same with subhuman you are a lie, I'm the same man you are. That was going on even when we were in bondage, even when we were slaves, that was going on. Nat Turner, do you think he could challenge the white man and put himself up as a sacrifice? Make himself a martyr? That's what he did. Don't you know he knew he was going to make himself a martyr? That he was going to lose his life? He knew that. He knew he couldn't defeat America with a few rebel slaves. But he had such a determination to assert his manhood. To tell a white man, you think I'm a servile brute, a servile beast that will put up with this treatment? I'm going to show you. I'm ready to die just like you are. And that kind of got up and... quite justly in history, but we can do it. We can do it. We can treat him justly in history. That was a great martyr who made a great sacrifice for his people, who knew he was going to die, put his life on the line. And he inspired John Brown. John Brown said, look, the black man couldn't do it, but I'm white. I think my sacrifice will make bigger waves than his. See, he did not mind for it. I'm going to do the same thing because the treatment that they're giving these souls of God, God created the black man just like it is the white, us whites, treatment that they're giving them that changed heaven and earth. And I'm going to rise up to and make a sacrifice. So John Brown, he did the same thing. He led a rebellion of our people and made his sacrifice. Don't you know he knew he was going to die? He knew he was going to die. He knew that meant death to him. But he made that sacrifice in the name of humanity. Respect for the human person. Don't treat him like a beast. Don't deny that he's a human. Don't treat him like that. Rose up and made the supreme sacrifice. To me, these are great events in the history of our people. John Brown, how can we separate? He's not separated from our history. How can we separate him? Though he was white. He wasn't brown, he wasn't black. He's white. But we got to include him in our history because he made the sacrifice for our people. That's a living history. That's not the only history. I see three major entities for us. Now that's one entity, one mold of our life. That history coming from Africa all the way to today. But in the full stream of that history, we find another mold comes into being. What is that mold? The next mold that comes into the being is the African American. After a while, we've gotten by living in America, by trying to establish ourselves in America. Many of us are established pretty well right now, individually speaking. Some of us are established pretty well. We make the whites, even the higher whites, envy and a little jealous, you know. Some of us are doing excellent. We're doing very well. So our success in America as Americans creates another entity of our life. So we have to think about our life as Africans. We have to think about life as Americans. And then now we have another life. We Muslims, we have another life. We have to think of our life as Muslims. So we have three entities. And I don't know if the Christians will see three entities. I think they should. I think our Christian brothers and sisters should see that they have three entities to their life. Three major entities to their life as beings living in history. Africa, America, and then their religion. Because religion is what gives us a sense of life. Yes. Don't just think of yourself as human. That's not enough. You got to think of yourself in a life system. We need a system of life to live in. Religion provides, major religions provide a life system for people to live in. You don't just get up any kind of way. You get up with a certain disposition of mind, spirit, and heart if you belong to one of the great religions. You don't just get up and behave any kind of way. You get up and respect the disciplines of your religion, the behavior that your religion has imparted to you and taught you, right? And then you don't go out in the world and select business or interest to involve yourself in or to devote yourself to with no discipline, with no governor or rule over your decisions. If you're serious about being a good religious person, you want to know first, does my religion approve of me being involved in the world in this particular thing? So the Muslim, Muslim, Jew, or Christian, or other, he will decide his place in the world based upon what his religion orders, right? So really, the most important life for us is our religious life. This is true for citizens of America, more so than it is true for anybody else. Why do I say that? Because America is a country that has a free enterprise system, and the free enterprise system allows commercial interests, commercial business, commercial interests to fish for the life of its citizens and capture the life, hook the life of citizens, and feed the life of citizens and influence the life of citizens to alter the way they think in business, to alter the way they think morally, to alter the way they think about God, to alter their total way of thinking. Business is free in America to do that. And most of the Christians are wiped out. Their humanity is shattered. Muslims too, but this is most of the popular, majority Christian in this country. So I say most Christian. Most, I should change that to say most of American citizens. Most of the citizens of America, their sense of humanity is just shattered. Their sense of freedom is shattered. Their concept of freedom, shattered. Their sense of purpose on this earth, shattered. What has done that? The influence that have taken us out of our identity in a system of life, Christianity, Islam, whatever, and brought us under its influences to make us have only a sense for what it influenced us to have. So when we think about a human being, we are sensitized to not think of a human being as an intellect unless something happened to bring us to that awareness again. Something has to bring us back to that awareness that a human individual person is an intellect. An individual person is a soul created by God, and nothing could give us, create an individual like that, only God. See, we don't come to that sense unless something happened to bring us back to that sense. When we think of a person, we think of a person by name or by race. He's black. Oh, that's Mary. Oh, that's Joe, right? Oh, that's that nigga. That's how we think of each other.
And the treatment, our treatment of each other, tells us where we get our sense of perception. We kill each other over money. So we get our sense of perception from American commercialism. You see? We don't value the human person above the money, the material person. The material person is more important than the human person. So we kill each other over money. So, Trace, where do we get that from? Is that Christianity? No. Is that Islam? No. So where do we get that? Where do we get that kind of idea about what a human being is? Why do we get that behavior to treat a human being like that? How are we looking at him to make us treat him that way? Where did we get this way of looking at him to make me treat him like that? We didn't get it from Christianity. We didn't get it from Islam. We got it from commercialism. That make the car you ride in more important than you and your whole family. That make the wardrobe that they entice you with more important than the flesh and skin on the body. You cut that flesh off that nigga for his wardrobe. Now excuse the language. I use this kind of language. I'm a self-styled psychologist. Value the most. You shot this garment, so I can't wear it again. For the one I was wearing. So that tells me which one you value the most. Huh? You sliced this one up with your razor or something. Because you ended me in this one. So that tells me that this is where you place your value, not on the human flesh. You shoot a man down and your daddy can't come back to the family no more. Can't have no friend no more. Can't see anybody anymore. So that tells me you care more about the material side of life than you do about the soul of human beings. Yeah. So when we look at the destruction of life, in this society, we know just where you've gotten that new perception of life. We know just where you've gotten that new attitude toward life. We know just where you've gotten that new behavior toward human beings. You got it from commercialism. Now, I'm not speaking from my own position. You study the Bible, you study the Quran. The Bible, both books tell us this, that Satan the devil, yes, sir, he will get the people through their appetite for material things. Yes. And the cities will become the places where Satan will be ruling, where Satan will be dominating. And the marketplaces will be the places where there's even the sanctuary of life will be threatened by the marketplaces in these great material cities of material greed. This is scripture I'm telling you. Read it for yourself if you want to take the time. But I just saved you a lot of time. You gonna give me some money later? I just saved you a lot of time. I gave you what you have to read, pages and books to find. I've given it to you in a couple of minutes. Yes. The Satan, he sees a way to get control of the world through the material appetite. And then he goes about to feed the greed for material things in the people of earth so that they will be the market for him. If they remain disciplined, remain moral, they have strong principles, strong virtues, strong moral, that goes against what he wants. That slows up his work. That keeps you from realizing what you want to realize. So a part of commercialism, you notice I'm saying commercialism. I'm not saying economy, I'm saying commercialism. The part of commercialism is to feed blind, insane animal appetite. Now don't think this is animal, no. You dignify this thing too much to call it animal. Many animals have a high sense of social life. They have a high sense of commitment to their children, to their babies. So we can't say this is an animal. No, this is lower than animal. The Quran doesn't say that this he's going to be a beast, but he is worse than the beast. Say he is worse than beast, worse than cattle, worse than dumb cattle. But the Quran doesn't dignify this thing by saying it's an animal. No, it's worse than the ordinary animal. It's beneath the animal. That's what that's sad to mean. Reduced to the lowest of all creatures. Yes. So with our free intellect, we have the freedom to be to be degraded, to accept, to go down beneath the level of dignity for any creature on this earth. We can be lower than a dog. They always talk, oh, you old low dog, did you? Well, if you say that nice to a dog, you might make that dog angry. Oh, you old low dog, you call him a low dog, what are you doing? Much lower than a dog. Is it true? Muslims are supposed to have a strong sense of family. And Allah tells us that family obligations have a priority with God. They have priority with God. That means, well, I can give you many examples from the life history of the prophet to show you that he put family before everything. Family is more important. Family sensitivity is more important than winning the war. He wouldn't allow the close relative of an enemy to fight that enemy, to kill that enemy. He would hold back the brother from killing his own brother, even though the brother was on the side of the enemy wanting to kill all Muslims. He would hold back the brother and say, no, let this person, don't kill him, let him fight him. Let him go meet him on the battlefield. That's the sensitivity the prophet had for the family. Please be upon him. Not only that, when Allah says that family, close relatives, family, that means family, your close relatives, brothers, sister, son, daughter, husband, wife, father, mother, that these have a priority with God, it's to be taken very broadly. It means that you are not supposed to be asked to take money from your needy children and give it to W.D. Muhammad. No. You don't leave a baby crying and say, I'm helping W.D. Muhammad. You make sure that baby ain't crying, that baby has something to eat, and you wait until you get something more than the necessities for your family. You make sure that you have a room to stay in, lights on, a stove, some of your food, and some money for your children so that they don't be crying and begging and going with hungry stomachs or eating something that's bad for their health. No, you do that first, and Allah will bless you for loving your family and loving your children and loving each other. Allah will bless you all to have some one day to help Imam Nadiruddin Muhammad. Now, I just use myself as an example. Not only that, the cause of God. You don't go out in the cause of God and leave your babies there desperate. They crying, they insane, nobody there to protect them. They don't know what's going to happen tonight because you're out of the house. You're going out there in the cause of God. See, that kind of silly idea exists in some religions that's based upon myth and fantasy and fiction. See, they think they know the way of God because they're all hyped up in the soul and having all kind of dreams of strange things high above and afterlife, you see? So they think they really got a revelation, and they're, oh, this is for God, you don't worry about the baby will take care of itself. They say, oh, Brother Imam, but didn't Abraham leave Sarah? Hagar? In the desert with her child? Yes, I'll tell you about that sometime. He sure did. And there was water and food and everything there. Don't misunderstand. and Hagar could handle it. Hagar is Hajar. Yes, and Hajar is also desert. She was prepared to exist in the desert. Yes. He wouldn't dare to leave Sarah out there, buddy. Believe me. He wouldn't have left Sarah out there. He left Hagar out there because Hagar was Hajar. And Hajar is desert. She was prepared to survive in the desert. That's how come he left her out there. And he had helped the situation in the desert because he brought some additional life and understanding to her. And impregnated her with this meal that would bring water from nowhere. Well, I don't mean from nowhere, but you know they didn't think it was anywhere. It wasn't, they didn't know where it was, but it came up. With this meal, it came up. She was looking for water for her son, and there it was right up under his heel. Yeah. That water, just the level and balance, if you just leave it alone, let it rest, oh yeah, you can just It's like it's still on your heels, you know. Yeah, brought the water up right up under his heels. All of that is to be understood. Don't think that God wants us to I know that rent is due, brother, but you know, I'm going to leave heaven, brother. I got to go out and still be alive. He said, be alive. I'm going to leave heaven and be saved, brother. I love it. They get a heaven and be saved. I'm going to take care of you too in hellfire. You don't know what you're doing. Yeah. You don't know what you're doing. Family is most important. The family bonds are most important. If we can restore the healthy human respect, family respect, human family, human family. We're not snake family, dog family, beast family, Hollywood family, Hollywood monster family. No, we're human family. Let's get back to the original meaning of that. Let's establish human families in our homes, in our apartments, in our rooms. Let's, wherever we exist, husband, wife, mate, children, and all. Let us establish human respect, human family respect for each other. Let us strengthen the bonds of family members. Strengthen them. Let us make the sanctuary our home. First sanctuary is your home. It's more sacred than the most sacred quarters in a mosque. You know what I'm saying? It's your home. If you don't make it human and have human family respect for each other, your home is more sacred than any place in the mosque. Or in a church, or in a synagogue. No place is more sacred than that. And the symbol in Mecca, the Kaaba, is only a symbol of that first house in our own life as individual male and female. It's a symbol of that. That you should have the black house, the house of mystery. The mystery, the house that's a mystery. How did this life come about? How did God create it? From where we came? We don't know. Because we didn't create ourselves. So the first social life, the first home life is a mystery shrouded in blackness. Not only is the black stone there, but they cover it in black clothing. They put black clothing over it. You see? And really, if you understand the word to say it in the Arabic, say it also comes from Sa'ud. Sa'ud means black. Aswad, black. Sa'ud, black. Say it, mister. See, that the Arabs have it in his language. A term derived from black, meaning black. And when he called him Mister. Mister. Why? Because the first master, the first man of dignity and nobility was created by God. He's the social man in the original nature that never we can understand fully. Only God knows our origin and our being in totality. We don't know it. We don't know it all together. It's a mystery to us how this was created. It's a mystery to us how this lives and exists and carries so much burden and performs so many wonderful tasks. It's a mystery how this human machine operates with its complexity. Well, science hasn't solved the mystery yet. It still baffles them. They say the most complex machine is the human being himself. That was science. Modern science still says that. You see? So this is always a mystery. We know something about ourselves, but we never know everything about ourselves. And when we go to that part of ourselves that's farthest back in history of ourselves, it becomes nothing but a big question mark. So we don't know how this social life came about. We know that it evolved on Earth. God is giving the credit for it. So we use as a symbol blackness. It was created in darkness. Before even we became consciously aware, before even our intellect became aware of this very unique thing that God created, we were already living our life, our reality. We were already living as social creatures, social beings, with a sense of family, a loyalty to family, a commitment to family. Everything evolved from that sense of family, from that first unit we call home life or family life. From it evolved cooking, hunting, industry, cooking, medicine, everything. Don't you know that? Everything evolved from the original home life, the sense of home for man. Yes. Now, if we can appreciate that and go back to a sense of family, and you realize that the most precious life we have is our original social life, the social bonded life, social bonds, that life that we see father, mother, children, brothers, sisters, close relatives. That's the most precious life. And then build upon that. We want, you know, when we look at the Muslim Spring in the holy precincts and try to stretch our imagination so we see the whole earth, what do we see? We see a circle around a house, a house with a black stone in its corner, and the corners and the rejected stone shall become the corner. Who rejected the original human nature of man? Those who were misguided in religion. They became saints, hermits, monks, priests, Gnostics, and they believed that this human body was the cause of all their trouble. So they rejected human nature. They call them nihilists. They annihilate the human nature, and thinking that to the extent that they can separate themselves from human nature and human identity, that they can become divine. So they sought a destiny in divine identity, thinking that their human nature was the beast or the animal form. But God made one flesh to speak for all flesh. And if God could take one flesh and make all one flesh rise above the gravity of flesh, and then grasp onto science and revelation and science and all the other wonderful things that we see in abstract, not in concrete, and then lift his flesh up with new knowledge, with new illumination of the mind, of the intellect, he lifts his flesh up above the kingdoms of the animal, and then he starts to be concerned for the eagle, for the bald-headed eagle that's dying out. He starts to be concerned for the whale that's being killed off, and he starts being concerned for all the animals. Want to keep all of them on earth? They have to prolong, keep their life. God gave them a chance on earth too. Let's keep them here. God wants the animals to live too. So he becomes a guardian for the animal kingdom. He speaks for flesh. He's flesh. His flesh is the same as that. Chicken flesh, all of his flesh, it bleeds and everything. They get suntan too. I saw a rooster got suntan so bad. I wanted to put on rubber over his head. Yeah. So you know, they get the flesh is flesh. So God can call an illumination in one species of flesh that rises them up where they care for all other flesh. Their excellence, their superiority, speaks for all flesh. This is philosophical, but this is true. Yes. Say if you belong to the Johnson family. Maybe some of the Johnson family ain't nothing worth looking back at. But if one of the Johnson family rise high in society, doesn't that speak for the whole Johnson family? That's the idea that they give in the Bible when they say, lift me up and I'll draw all men up to me. Because whatever is possible for one man, it speaks for the possibility of all men. So if we believe that God evolved flesh, then if he evolved man to a high position, it speaks for the excellence that God has put in flesh. This is flesh! Well, hell, don't tell me that when I buy a poorhouse steak or something, don't tell me I ain't buying meat. And to me, it speaks for the excellence of meat. We know that cheat meat, but this is poor house steak. So don't tell me meat is cheap. So if I got an excellent, highly evolved human being, then don't tell me human being is cheap. Huh? Maybe you tell me that particular one is cheap, but not human being. This human being too. Huh? So don't tell me flesh is cheap. If the flesh of Jesus can go up into heaven, flesh ain't cheap. If the certain problem went to heaven, the whole soul is bothered, flesh ain't cheap. If Prophet Muhammad went up into the highest human sphere and came down in Jerusalem, that flesh ain't cheap. Flesh can go up to heaven. It ain't cheap. Yeah, you see what I'm saying? So whatever happens for one in a tank happens for all of them. And we belong to the animal kingdom, though we human. We belong to flesh. Scientifically speaking, in our bodies, we're just like animals. And don't we come here just like animals?
calling on our hands and knees, unable to speak any language, calling on our phones. If they leave us with the animals, we'll become animals. This is documented that a child was left with the animals, and the lady who was studying primitive cultures, she found him and she wrote about him.
That's right.
He was running around barking like a gorilla.
That he is special, Miss Luhum. He is a mortal person just like you. That's Basharun, Miss Luhum. That he's a mortal person just like you are. That's what Allah says in the Quran. What is that to tell us? That one mortal excellence, you are human. He's no divine. He's no angel. He's human being in every respect just like you are. So his excellence speaks for you. It speaks for the possibilities that all mortals have. Now, not that we will become false Muhammad. What's the need? No need for it. No need for it. If God wanted somebody to come and tell us the sun rotates around the earth and not the earth rotates around the sun, but once somebody tell us that, do we need another one to tell us that? No, it wouldn't make sense unless you forgot all that. And I don't think we ever forget Muhammad. So why do we need another Muhammad? He is the last prophet. He is the last Muhammad. He is the Muhammad the prophet. But his excellence speaks for what God has created all of us with. The excellence to lead the world, to be Khalifa, and to set the best example for all people, whether they belong to your religion or not. And that's what Muslims should be aspiring to. And in my conclusion, Allah gave us Friday as Jummah Day. Friday. That's a very important day in our life, Jummah. It means gathering. It means congregation. Coming together. The day for us to come together. Social means coming together. Society. It's a group made up of many people. So Jummah gives us a focus on our society. It gives a focus on the Muslim society. We hear Muslim knowledge. We see Muslim devotion, Muslim spirit. So that gives us a chance to come into an environment that is Muslim, a social environment that is Muslim. And when you come there, you shouldn't come there just like you come there with no belonging to your brother and sister. You come there just to say prayers to Allah and you go. No, you see your brother, you say, As-salamu alaykum, brother. Wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh. As-salamu alaykum, sister. Rahmatullahi wa barakatuh. You show love for your brothers and sisters. You greet them. They are members of one body. The Muslim character is the jism in sand, Prophet Muhammad said, peace and prayers and peace be on him. The Muslim in that collective form is as the one body of a human person. One body of a human person. We have to see ourselves as one single body. A plurality that advances the concept and the profoundness of unity. Thank you very much. As-salamu alaykum.